The point is to document the difficulty, well, the danger that homeless people in Ross Camp and homeless people outside generally face as a function of inadequate shelter, abusive police direction, and police colluding with vigilante activity or enabling it or ignoring it. And this kind of documentation is what's being gathered at the Food Not Bombs Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless table, the union table that's often found on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday, at the Food Not Bombs meal. As I said before, you can find it down there if you check it out between 4 and 6 today, Sunday.
I live outside where Rick and Ross and that. So those things are, I think, valuable.
When did this thing happen, this guy's death?
Saturday at 7:30 at the River. Well, he was found by the police 7:30 at Water and River Street.
7:30 in the morning?
No,
he was just laying there?
Right after the ground bombs meal.
Oh, really? What, was there any sign of violence against him?
No, he was, they found him in the well that he was, had some substance abuse crisis that had caused him to pass out on the street there, on the sidewalk.
His sister posted on our page.
Yeah, she's...
Wow. He seemed to me like a pretty healthy guy. I mean, but strong. Seemed a strong guy.
Well, obviously, it'd be a great idea if we can accumulate that kind of data.
Yeah.
So, who's going to, you going to work on that?
I could call it. We need to get like a team that just talks to the, that we introduce to the forum.
And indeed, if any listeners are interested in being helpful here, give a call to the Huff Line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You don't have to come to meetings, you don't have to engage in protests, you don't have to sit through boring or obnoxious city council meetings. You can actually do this kind of work independently of all that and help gather the documentation that makes it clear what's going on against folks outside, what is studiously ignored by the Sentinel, the Good Times, and only occasionally referred to in the City on a Hill press and other media. Facebook has more of it, but Facebook is, of course, more like a vanity press.
I mean, like, for example, your point about trying to get information about people, women who have been raped or mistreated since Ross is closed. I mean, that would be wonderful. That would be very informative information if we could gather it. So I'm going to have to do that. That'd be great. Yeah, I want to suggest that we go through the
report.
I sent you all, I think, Micah's ordinance. The ordinance that Micah sent out, that Micah prepared to the city council, or the city council when he was on the city council, regarding the issue of bathrooms, etc. And as it suggests, I wrote Sandy.
This is an ordinance that was presented again, an ordinance essentially that said no more bathrooms shall be closed without the actual action by the city council. It can't be done by a lower-level bureaucrat like the head of the Loudoun Nelson Center did a year ago in response to the closing of the San Lorenzo campground that essentially drove people over into other parks, one of them being Laurel Park, right next to the Loudoun Nelson Center, causing more extensive use of the bathrooms and shock and horror among the privileged middle class, and particularly among the staff, I guess, of the Loudoun Nelson Center, who didn't like the increased usage and claimed a vandalism-slash-needle-mania behavior problem that they had already presented justification for, they claimed, and prompted a this huge, well, extensive wrought iron fence around Laurel Park and the patrolling of the park with the Parks and Rec. Get out of here at night, rangers, or else we'll give you stay-away orders punishable by a month in jail if you violate them. Actually, not a month in jail. It's 6 months in jail. It's a misdemeanor. I don't know that many people have actually been tried and convicted under this ordinance, but it's enough of a threat to essentially terrorize poor and homeless people outside without even having to go to court, which is the whole point. But the purpose of the Posner/Glover resolution, which I was at a meeting where this was discussed, was to restore the power of the community through the elected majority on the city council, which at that time hopefully was a 4-3 majority, and since then Cummings has cut and run or ducked and weaved and joined the Myers, Matthews, Watkins minority on many key votes like rent control, closing of the Ross camp, procedural rights of the public to have extended public comment time when Watkins is trying to shut them down, delaying issues from the agenda, which Watkins has been doing regularly with the connivance of the city manager. So the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms and the bathrooms at City Hall closed 3 years ago in order to, shall we say, discommode or disadvantage or make more difficult people who were engaging in a nightly protest at City Hall, a peaceful protest to restore the rights of homeless people to sleep somewhere legally at night. That any kind of change in that situation has been kept in the tight grip of the Parks and Rec Department, which has refused to restore community access to the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms or the City Hall bathrooms, which are, I guess, they're under the purview of the city manager, Martine Bernal. The new head of Parks and Rec, Tony Elliott, has had some very nice yak-yak meetings with Conscience in Action people, but done absolutely nothing around this issue. And the whole issue has been constantly kicked ahead in the city council agenda, mostly through the unilateral action of Watkins, but also through the connivance of Justin Cummings, or I should say, if you want to be generous, the naive succumbing of Justin Cummings to the blandishments and the narrative of the conservative minority on city council headed by Watkins and really masterminded by Matthews, which involves saying things like, well, you've got to get the county's buy-in on all this because they have all the money and they're the very more powerful social service provider for the area. And therefore, unless you get them to agree to this stuff, you're in trouble. So that's why you got to close the Ross camp, because Coonerty is holding back on funding for the 1220 River Street and will continue to hold back funding on other projects unless you do what he says. And instead of standing up to this and saying, we're not going to displace 300 people and cause more difficulties in the neighborhoods among with housed people, not just with the people who are outside, just because some right-wing bully some phony former constitutional lawyer who was part of a powerful family in Santa Cruz that runs the bookshop Santa Cruz decides that's what has to be done. Sorry, that ain't going to happen. That's not, unfortunately, what is being, that's not the message that Cummings is willing to transmit or is listening to. He's listening instead to this, we can only proceed unless we get the buy-in of the county and all this stuff, and we have to essentially succumb to what they're doing on the so-called 2x2 committee, which is him and Watkins and two supervisors, one of which is Coonerty, I believe. Anyway, let's hear a little more of this and then something else.
And Justin, with copies to the other council people, asking them to act on this. Obviously, we should follow up with phone calls, etc., to get them to respond to the ordinance request, which, you know what I'm talking about? Did you see it?
And you're about to hear me burst out, I suspect, if I remember properly. Phil Posner, who's proposing that, we lobby the council on behalf of the Posner-Glover proposal, which has been deeply buried. And we're not, we're a small group of people. We certainly can lobby. But Conscience in Action was, as you're going to hear probably from some of this discussion, was designed to engage in action based upon the feelings of conscience, not tepid lobbying efforts or putting hopes, futile hopes, in the behavior of city council members who have already agreed. I mean, Glover has essentially been silenced and somewhat tamed by this mysterious investigation into his supposed sexist behavior towards presumably Watkins, when in fact, of course, it's the abusive procedural actions of Watkins in violation of the will of the voters and the majority of the city council that is really at issue. And when it's exposed by Glover, her response is to cry sexist and to play the sexist card. So, you know, I suppose you should be glad if you're looking at this from a purely debating point of view that Glover isn't saying, racist. You know, we don't have that going on, although that may well be an element of this. I don't think it really is. I think city council majority is familiar with Uncle Tomism and that it doesn't really matter. I mean, witness Obama, the president of the United States, who, as Nobel Peace Prize winner, threw more bombs than any Nobel Peace Prize winner in history. In other words, it's not a matter of your color, your race, if you're in political office, as long as you go along with the white supremacist majority, the imperialist majority, or in this case, the anti-homeless majority locally, the Trumpism in Santa Cruz majority, that the Democrats are equally bad in doing, are equally good at doing, if not worse than the Republicans, because they have the cover, the camouflage of the best liberal intentions.
So I'm interrupting because I just got a report of a police, Greg?
Police and Rangers are totally attacking the tracks up by the Homeless Services Center and are grabbing everything, sleeping bags and wallets with baby pictures. I even said, look, those are the bumpkins.
And, you know, did you see my post about that? I also have a photograph of the police officer going like this and giving a thumbs up.
Really?
Yeah, but they didn't post the picture of the officer giving a thumbs up.
It's ridiculous. Them. And it's making my friends that don't cry, cry.
The reason I'm interrupting is it's happening right
this minute. And we need to make sure that yard is called right now.
Greg, let's go.
Greg, how long
did it take?
How long? Greg, how long? How long ago were you there?
10 minutes.
I have limited time here. I have agendas.
Well, I mean, do we want to stop the meeting and go over there?
I'll go over there.
Let's go over there.
A roving meeting.
So you do.
Somebody needs to document. I mean, but number one, let's call Yard to get some. Let's get, because they don't care. They don't even care that I'm there. And well, they do. They're like,
And Yar is a group that has maybe called upon to act if Trump's local lieutenants come after immigrants, as he's been threatening to do today, this Sunday, June 23rd. At least that was the report I read in the not always reliable Saint Anal newspaper, which is the paper of record. But Yar was also concerned with supporting the Ross camp and showing up when the police were there to make sure there was a humane approach. Of course, humanely directing people into the wilderness from their a protected camp is hardly humane, even if it's done in a humane way. So it's kind of ridiculous. But the idea of a monitoring group is a very good idea. It turned out that Greg, the guy who raised the alarm about this police action out on the near the railroad tracks, near the homeless lack of services center on Coral Street, was a bit off in his time frame. And it happened, according to the people who we talked to when we got there, an hour before. And the real key to these kinds of circumstances, to get real documentation that the police are engaging in this activity and to make it vivid, visual, and even legally actionable, is to be there on time while it's happening, to get pictures of police disposing of usable materials into a dumpster and compacting it and destroying it and taking it away, which has been the policy of Santa Cruz, Parks and Rec, and police, not necessarily systematically in all cases, but sufficiently that it is a real risk. And of course, the ability to get your stuff back is really problematic. You have to be able to identify it. You have to be able to identify to the satisfaction of the police. You have to show up on only during the very narrow window, Tuesdays and Thursdays between 12:30 and 2:30 are the only times, even though the police station is well enough funded to have a Parks and Rec, because Parks and Rec does use the storage area too, but a police officer giving access to survival material that homeless people have had their blankets and bedding seized from them by police and by other authorities, to have that available at any time during the day when the police department is open. But no, it's only 4 hours a week. It's completely ridiculous. Anyway, we did go out there. I'll hear a little bit more as we break up the meeting and go out there. This was kind of a first for the Conscience in Action, which usually plans these things in advance. And the key here, the key to these kinds of actions, if they're successful, is to have someone who is in contact with us by phone so we can get out there soon enough with video equipment. It certainly can have an impact. So, for example, in Fresno back in 2006, Mike Rhodes and his daughter were able, through video, to sufficiently document the destruction of homeless property that they got attorneys on board, aware that they could win a case, and they did win a case, a $2.3 million case against the city, which resulted in something of a protective injunction for at least some homeless people for a period of about 10 years until 2016 or thereabouts. And one of these days we'll have another report from Mike Rhodes, hopefully, in Fresno. Maybe get some word from that from Alicia Kuhl, who went there yesterday for a meeting of the National Lawyers Guild in hopes of getting more legal support for the Santa Cruz chapter of the Union of the Homeless and its lawsuit against the city for its abusive behavior toward homeless people at Ross Camp and across the city generally.
They don't even care that I'm there. And well, they do. They're like, uh-oh. I can hear them whispering. They know that. But this is... I have friends that their baby pictures, the pictures of their babies, that's the last thing they have to claw to in life. And they're cutting down on their heroin, they're doing all sorts of stuff, and they're making progress, and these people are coming in and just destroying everything.
So does anyone want to contact this group, YAR?
I think it's important.
Does anyone take pictures?
And again,
I have to.
they shoot me out of there.
You were taking some pictures?
No. I couldn't even find my...
Give a report to YAR. Someone should get up there and get pictures. It was a photo.
Well, I mean, it's obviously real news in yesterday's newspaper.
No, right. He's talking about something happening now.
Right this minute.
So what are we
and it's really instead freaking out even the hardcore people.
Let's be doers instead of talking.
Yeah, this is if we want action.
Okay, so we're on this subject now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So who has video capability here right now? You do. Anybody else have video capability on their phone?
Hi. I'm in Santa Cruz.
I have audio capability.
We were set by the homeless service there and by the tracks and rangers and police. Are taking people's belongings en masse, and they're taking everything. They're taking survival gear. They're taking. We need quick response, and it's happening right now, right this very minute. I just left there 10 minutes ago, and people that never complain were complaining to me like, "Greg, this, please." They're like, "Now we understand why we need to be involved politically."
So while he's on the phone talking, we have nobody has video equipment here at all.
Yeah, up on the tracks.
Yeah,
up on the tracks. They're up on the tracks. But they're all over
they're
on course.
They resist
and up on the tracks.
Greg, do it outside. Do it outside. Yeah. He's talking to the people that were the immediate reaction group for Ross that were going to come down and help if there was a. I don't know if they did to some extent the day that Ross was disbanded.
Why is he calling them?
Well, because they may be.
They will show up.
They're concerned about. They're concerned about immigrants and harassment of immigrants, and also concerned about homeless people.
They'll show up in video.
So you only people who's cursing got video is you, Gloria. Nobody else has any videos.
My phone doesn't have enough storage left.
Do you need?
So somebody could drive down there. We either could go as a group. As free. As free suggests.
Anyone else wants to step up?
Or we could. We could, send someone down there, or we could say, well, nothing new with that, let's forget it. Whatever you want to do, we can do.
So. I think it's a great time for you to show your face.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly my face. It's pretty attractive.
No, you always show up at like 2 in the morning with your pajamas on. What are you doing?
Bathroom. Bathroom.
He can sleep
he
here.
He's about his birthday party.
Well, I'm willing to suspend this meeting and go over there with people if that's what you want to do.
I want to go.
I personally think it's a good idea.
All right, well, all right.
We got
all right.
Some things we can do that we're
okay. How many people are willing to go? All right, looks like everybody in the same place is willing to go. Okay, that's
Steve, good. You don't want to go?
Steve, hold your meeting.
No. Okay. So, I mean, yeah,
let's have a meeting there.
Okay, so we're just...
Well, I'd say leave it here. Okay. Come back. And then we can come back when that's over and return. Do people want to return to this meeting? Nick, Tom, do you want to return to this meeting when we're finished there?
Sure.
Yeah.
I can, but I will.
Yeah.
I'll probably be leaving from there.
The only other thing that I wanted to address was the issue of the ordinance thing, but we can hold off on that.
Okay.
And of course, the ordinance issue, which should have come up in May, we did take off. By the way, we went down there, we recorded some, we found no police there, but we did find people who had experienced the police harassment, who had their property taken. We took some declarations from them and gave them to the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless activist Alicia Kuhl to pass on to the general counsel to the state union of the homeless, the attorney Anthony Prince. And I'm not quite sure where that has gone up to now, but the idea of some real action right in the middle of the meeting was a positive idea. If we only had, of course, better preparation in terms of video equipment being available and ready to go, adequate warning, as I said before, it would be even better. So who knows? Maybe that's going to develop in the future. If you want to come to these meetings, you can. They happen every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. At the Sub Rosa Cafe, right next to the Bike Church at 703 Pacific in downtown Santa Cruz. And that was I Don't Want to Be a Hero by Johnny Hates Jazz. Never heard of him. And it's, I guess, you know, we're talking about the commercialization of anti-war songs, and I'm lamentably contributing to that. But, yeah, it's an anti-war song and a kind of an anti-war song, although it's not very specific. It'd be nice to be a hero engaging in a different kind of struggle. But best not to be a hero for the the imperialist boot on the nations of the poor throughout the world. That wouldn't be, that isn't such a good idea. Though, of course, it's how we in Santa Cruz and throughout the United States get our daily bread and butter through collusion with that system. It's something that I even have regret about every now and then. So in several of the interviews upcoming, you're going to hear me razzing the people I'm interviewing for not mixing in a little concern about the possibility of World War III or a U.S. war against Iran, and the complete quiescence or quietness in Santa Cruz around this issue compared with the rage and anger and protests that happened at least briefly before the, well, actually it was somewhat extended period of time before the second Iraqi war in 2003. There was the largest protest ever. I think 6,000 people marched in February against that war, February 2003. I was one of them. I think I was one of the few to get ticketed for crossing the street. I got a jaywalking ticket from my favorite police department. But there's no such protest happening in Santa Cruz now that I've heard of. Certainly it's not in the media. It's not on the internet. Nobody's doing shit, myself included. So I thought I'd read this story, which is on page 3, of course, of the Mercury News. Trump account of Iran attack plan comes under scrutiny. It's from the Washington Post, which is not one of my favorite papers, these establishment papers that tout the Russiagate excuse for Clinton's losing the election and have this ridiculous attack on Trump, which misses the point and actually gives power to his constituency, which is really ridiculous, and also ramps up anti-Russian hostility, which is ridiculous too, considering we're still on the edge of a nuclear holocaust every fucking minute of the day. And that's something that most of us, myself included, go about our daily business completely ignoring. Otherwise, we'd be shitting in our pants. Are extremely, extremely anxious for those we care about. Anyway, here's this article by John Hudson, Missy Ryan, and Aaron Cunningham of the Washington Post, buried on page 2 or 3 of the Mercury News, and I don't even know if it was covered in the Sentinel. It might have been. President Donald Trump on Friday described a nail-biting decision to call off an imminent attack on Iran in order to avoid disproportionate casualties, but the account is already facing scrutiny from aides around him and military and analysts questioning the sequence of events he laid out in tweets and statements. Early in the day, the president, I like to call him the Führer, said he called off the counterattack at the last minute because it would kill 150 people in retaliation for the downing of an unmanned surveillance drone. We were cocked and loaded to retaliate last night on 3 different sites when I asked how many will die, he tweeted, misspelling the word sites. But administration officials said Trump was told earlier Thursday how many casualties could occur if a strike in Iran was carried out, and that he had given the green light to prepare for the operation Thursday morning. The confusion reinforced concerns about the Trump regime's credibility. They say administration, I say regime. At a time when key U.S. allies are already questioning its narrative about Iran's culpability for a recent spate of attacks on oil tankers. The decision has divided his top advisors, with senior Pentagon officials opposing the decision to strike, and National Security Advisor John Bolton strongly supporting it. Iran said Friday that the United States had no justification for a retaliatory strike and vowed to respond firmly to any U.S. military action. Of course, what we need here locally is an immediate emergency resolution from the Santa Cruz City Council denouncing this activity by the U.S. government, and also encouraging withdrawal of our local financial, our city's financial involvement in any militarily connected enterprises and any firms that invest in those kinds of war-supporting activities. But, you know, certainly at least a symbolic statement denouncing this idea and, you know, encouraging other cities to do the same. I'm not a big, I don't have a lot of confidence that Trump's going to pay much attention, but I think that the Democratic Party, which is doing its round of cosmetic preparations for the presidential election, where you're going to have essentially the two wings of the same corporate policy, the same corporate party, making no significant real proposed changes, and certainly not coming out to stop World War III now when it might make a difference. If anybody wants to do any protesting around this issue, give me a call at 423-4833. I may have to interrupt my TV watching and my book reading and my writing little pamphlets to do something about that and to join you. 423-4833 if anybody knows of any kind of protests that are growing around this issue. But continuing this article, Trump's morning tweets appeared to gloss over the fact that he was the one, as the commander-in-chief, who had ordered the retaliation against Iran in the first place. Trump administration officials, who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive national security decisions, said the president approved the strikes after Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps earlier in the day shot down the Navy RQ-4 Global Hawk, a move Trump described as a very big mistake. But he later changed his mind, the official said. The commander of the Revolutionary Guard's Aerospace Division said Friday that Iran had sent warnings to the drone before shooting it down. In an interview with Iran's state-controlled broadcaster, Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh said a final warning was sent at 3:55 a.m. local time Thursday. When it did not redirect its route and continued flying toward and into our territory, we had to shoot at it at 4:05 a.m., he said. Our national security is a red line. He said Iran refrained from also shooting down a U.S. P-8 patrol aircraft with 35 people on board that he asserted had accompanied the drone into Iranian airspace. His claim could not immediately be verified. A senior U.S. defense official said Friday morning that the Pentagon had Navy assets poised to strike in Iran if directed, including ships accompanying the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln. Those attacks could have included airstrikes with jets or, more likely, Tomahawk cruise missiles, the official said. Trump's initial tweet suggested he had canceled his own order 10 minutes before the strike. I stopped it, he said. But in an interview with NBC's Chuck Todd for Meet the Press, the president said he hadn't given final approval to any strikes and that no planes were in the air. Nothing was green-lighted until the very end because things changed, Trump said in the interview. In his Twitter post Friday morning, Trump wrote that sanctions are biting and more added last night. However, the Treasury Department did not add any new sanctions against Iran on Thursday night. There was also confusion about how the United States and Iran were communicating during the crisis at a time when the two adversaries have very few diplomatic contacts. The Reuters news agency reported Friday that Iranian officials said they received a message from Trump through a man overnight warning that a U.S. attack was imminent. When asked about the report, a senior U.S. administration official said the United States never sent a message to Iran via the Omanis. The country at the eastern edge of the eastern corner of the Arabian Peninsula has long been an interlocutor between the West and Iran, but not on this occasion, the official said. It is a complete lie and propaganda from Iran, the official said. Earlier Friday, the head of Iranian media services also told NBC News that the Reuters report was inaccurate. He said that such a message from the United States was never sent, and the content of the messages is also false. The Federal Aviation Administration late Thursday barred U.S. registered aircraft from operating over the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman due to an increase in military activities and political tensions that it said might place commercial flights at risk. Not to mention your ass here in California, I might add. Several U.S. and international carriers said they had earlier canceled flights over Iranian airspace or were taking steps to avoid the strait of Hormuz. The day's events have left lawmakers in both parties confused about whether the United States remains on the precipice of a military conflict. Military conflict, read, worldwide nuclear war. No, the Iran does not have nuclear weapons, as far as I know, but there are plenty of people who do, and Iran will probably respond to U.S. attacks with counterattacks on those countries, and alliances may be pulled into operation and into activation. And there is really little doubt that a nuclear war wouldn't leave anyone but a few privileged characters in a bunker deep underground standing, and probably not them for very long. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of San Francisco, said Thursday she was not informed of Trump's plans to strike Iran, but described the latest events as dangerous, high-tension situation. But, of course, nothing that would call for the impeachment of Trump. We wouldn't want to go that far, you know. Well, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, expressed confidence in the president. Several hawks in Congress said the only appropriate response would be a swift military counterstrike. They're trying to break our will and intimidate us to come to the negotiating table, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, that's not Santa Cruz, said of the Iranians. Trump's comments on Thursday also left room for questions about how the administration planned to respond to Iran. Immediately following the drone's downing, he tweeted that Iran made a mistake. But Trump said he found it hard to believe that the attack on the drone was intentional on the part of Iran's top officials. He also noted that the aircraft was unmanned. There was no man or woman in it, he said. It would have made a big difference if the plane carrying people had been shot down. It would have made a big, big difference. Iran's strike on the U.S. drone Thursday followed a number of similar incidents, including attacks on tankers that American officials have depicted as part of an Iranian effort to hurt the United States and its allies in the region. But I would like to add, independently of this article by Hudson, Ryan, and Cunningham from the Washington Post, but in the Mercury News, Trump attack on Iran, a Trump account of Iran attack plan comes under scrutiny, that the supposed attack on oil vessels has also been called a false flag attack, cooked up by some people who want to provoke a conflict between Iran and the United States, some of whom are very vocal and who are running the government in the United States. John Bolton is a name that comes to mind.